You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 199 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, and joining me for this fine episode of the podcast is an old friend, Robbie Callen of Up Rock Sports. What's up, man?
How's it going?
We're here, man. it's been an interesting week plus, I guess almost 2 weeks now in Atlanta Hawks land, and we haven't talked in a while, at least recorded. And I kind of know where this is going to go for the most part from offline stuff, but I feel like we need to talk about some front office stuff. So here we are. I did talk about most of this stuff in the last couple of days, but I'm interested to see what your takes is. Let's just start with what actually happened with the shakeup. Bud going back to the bench as a full-time head coach only, and Wes being demoted. But I guess the official release said that they both sort of resigned and sort of voluntarily moved. There's been some pushback on that, but still, that's kind of what happened. The shakeups happened. I'm wondering what your big picture takeaways are, and then we can sort of drill down from there.
Bud going back to coaching is good. I think most everybody can agree that he will be at his best as a coach only. I think the issues that this front office dealt with was there was a clear divide between what Bud and Wes wanted to do as far as the next, what the future of the Hawks should be. And it doesn't surprise me. We've talked about this on the podcast before. The coach is never going to want to tear down completely. He could be sold on moving this player or that player for value, like Korver, but he's never going to be sold on a complete tear down. We've literally never seen it from any of these coach front office combo roles. The closest is Stan Van Gundy's willing to trade everybody, but the Pistons are already mediocre, like below mediocre. They're out of the playoffs. And he hasn't actually pulled the trigger on anything. So that tells you about as much as you need to know. I think that's good. Wes, it's clear that there's more. There's like Wrestler is also more on the Bud side is what it's clear from these moves. Because if you move Bud out of power in the front office from a title official decision maker standpoint, obviously he still has input as the coach. If you move him out, then you would in theory be moving out the obstacle to a rebuild. However, Wes has now been demoted to an advisory role, and they'll bring someone new in. My guess, based off of everything we've seen, is that the new person will not be. Let's start here. They're not bringing in Sam Hinkie.
No, they're not. They are not. I mentioned
they're not bringing in. No. They're not bringing in anybody remotely like Sam Hinkie. If they wanted to do the rebuild, they would have left Wes in charge, because that's what Wes would have tried to do based on all the reports that we've heard. That's not anything that I know.
Well, that even came, the David Aldridge report that came out, I believe, yesterday on Monday, basically said that, explicitly that his sources were saying that Wes wanted to rebuild and Bud didn't. And that was that was sort of the big takeaway. And that wasn't a big surprise in that one side of one. But that's, maybe I'm wrong here, but that was the first time that I saw that as clearly reported as it was. There's been that whispering, but, Aldridge said it plainly.
Yeah, and anybody that's been in that facility has heard those whispers. So for DA to run with it means he's got some pretty good juice on it. My expectation is not a whole lot changes. The biggest nugget from that DA thing, and I don't know if you touched on this already, is that Paul Millsap will be directly negotiating with Wrestler.
Yeah, I did, and you and I exchanged texts immediately when I saw that. we both had the same reaction to that, as that was the biggest sort of takeaway. I did mention it a little bit yesterday, but I mean, I guess the big thing is, like, how do you analyze that? Because it's definitely weird, because that, you know, the piece from DA indicated basically that even if the Hawks have a GM in place, they're still going to have that happen, which that's the kind of the crazy part, is that if you hire a GM before the draft, before free agency, and still have your best player negotiating with your owner, you know, for me, that makes it sound like, you know, Russ was going to be willing to pay kind of whatever it takes. But maybe that's not necessarily the big takeaway, but that's kind of how I read it.
I mean, that's how I read it. I don't know. Like, it's hard to look at that and figure out, okay, where's the new GM fit in? If you're looking at seriously taking this job, are you going to want to go? If you're David Griffin and you're being wooed by the Magic and the Hawks and anybody else that has any kind of front office opening, president, GM combo type things, because that's what it's going to take to get Griffin, first off, is it'll have to be a combo president GM. The reason Griffin leaves Cleveland is if he wants autonomous control, because it's clear that in Cleveland there are some other voices that have significant influence.
Yes, that's probably fair.
To say the least. One of them wears number 23 on the court. And there's nothing wrong with that. LeBron can do whatever the hell he wants in Cleveland. He brought them a championship. He's earned that right. However, if you're David Griffin, you've won the championship too. You can technically call yourself the architect, should you choose to. And what more is there left to do in Cleveland other than watch it fall apart if you're the general manager? You're maintaining at this point. If you look across the bow, if you don't win this year and you get smoked by Golden State, what do you do? You know? So I really do think how this finals goes will have a big impact on what Griffin does. If it's a tight series, 6-7 games, whatever it is, yeah, I think you come back and you think, okay, we can retool. We can, you know, build a better roster than we had last year, where they kind of just threw in pieces at the end and hope it worked out. And Darren Williams worked out, and Bogut didn't, obviously, and Larry Sanders didn't. And, you know, they kind of took some swings there at the end with what they could. But if you get smoked by the Warriors and you're looking at them re-upping everybody, Steph will be back, KD will be back, what do you do? Do you go, okay, let's ride out this in Cleveland? If you look at LeBron now, no one knows how much longer LeBron has. Okay. Anybody projecting when that decline's coming is just setting themselves up to look like a fool. However, realistically, you'd think 3 to 5 years would, you know, like, we keep waiting for LeBron to not be able to carry a team to the finals. We haven't gotten there yet. And sure as hell doesn't look like we're going to get there expediently, but at some point it's going to happen. If you're the GM, what do you do after that? How do you rebuild that? How do you rebuild after LeBron? That's a task that is not one everybody would want. And if you can go somewhere and you've won the championship and you're looking at it and you think, okay, well, the Warriors are about to kind of dominate for 3 or 4 years. Maybe this is a good time to get out. My stock's never been higher. I can get a job as president GM. You're not going to want to go to the Hawks, because if Ressler's the one that's in charge of negotiating for the top dog, that's not you. And that's not what you want. You want to go somewhere where you are the guy and you can kind of make a stamp on things. So you're not going to get Griffin. Dumars, goodness.
Yeah, I mean, that's the guy. I mean, Griffin, you know, has the respect, and people, you know, everybody, even people around the league think he's good. I mean, it's obviously a different situation when you have LeBron, but even before that, he was well-respected. So, I mean, the problem with Griffin is that you're never going to be able to give him enough power. You know, you don't hire a guy like Griffin and say, by the way, here's Wes Wilcox and here's Mike Budenholzer.
That's the thing.
It's a very weird situation.
And here's the owner that wants to negotiate with the top star.
Right. It's just that's never going to happen. Dumars is, I mean, I guess more reasonable, but there are some issues there. I talked about, I mean, people seem to think that he was this great drafter, and that's not really true if you look at it. And obviously, he did construct the title team. He'll always be able to say that. But what happened afterwards was really not very good, and I'm not particularly interested.
Didn't he draft Darko?
This is something I've been talking about. I mean, his first...
He's a great drafter. He drafted Darko.
His first 10 years of draft picks... And listen, he was a GM for more than a decade in Detroit, yeah. So that's a long time. You're gonna miss on some picks, but his first 10 years of picks, he basically made one good pick, and it was Tayshaun Prince. The rest of it is an absolute mess. And hilariously, when he got really bad at actually, you know, doing like free agency and trade things, is when he got good at drafting, which is pretty funny because he suddenly nailed like three in a row with Greg Monroe, Andre Drummond, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. That was a pretty good ending to his career as a drafter. Right. But before that, it was not good. And I'm okay. I'm kind of all set on Joe Dumars. That's not a name that's going to entice me very much. But you know, that's more. I guess it's more attainable than David Griffin. If you want to go ahead and make your splash and a guy people recognize, then he might be the one. But no, thank you. If it's my choice.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. It's.
I mean, you have Troy Weaver as well. I mean, that's an interesting name from Oklahoma City that surfaced. Also, Viv, Chris Livermore of the AJC reported. I'm not even sure he reported. Just mentioned that someone in passing talked to him on Tuesday about Mitch Kupchak, who's available. And Mitch had a, you know, sort of an up and down tenure in Los Angeles, but as a guy who's respected at least and might be a big enough name to where you might get a little buzz off of that too. But I'm not really sure what they want. That's the biggest thing. Is like, what do they want? Because it's going to be hard to, like, there's the whole segment of why would you want this job given all the cooks in the kitchen, as we just talked about. And there's also the segment of, like, what do the Hawks want? Do they want a guy who is going to want to try to win right now and maybe be a big name or be an established guy? Or do they want to go the Weaver route with someone who's sort of a lifer, who's really well-respected but has never done it before? So it's we don't know, and it's almost mid-May now, and we kind of need to know, but apparently there's no rush.
Well, there's that, and then there's... You're also, I mean, all your plans hinge on what Paul Millsap does. And that's an uncontrolled, I mean, you can control what you can control, and the fact that, God, that sounds like Saban. You can control what you can control when it comes to offering him a max if you want to go that high. And you would think he wouldn't turn that down. That would seem kind of silly from Paul. But you're kind of at the mercy of what Paul does, because if he says no, okay, if Paul Millsap turns you down, everything flips. Everything shifts how you have to focus, what you can do, because there's just not dudes on the market this year. This is not an especially deep free agent class. I mean, do you take your Paul Millsap money and throw it at Blake Griffin? That's your best bet?
And by the way,
if the Clippers don't re-up?
As a sidebar to that, people say, I mean, that's obviously a convenient one. He's the one guy that sort of is out there maybe that would fit. Right. But in the same breath, the Hawks kind of have to do some more maneuvering to even be able to do that, because, you know, you can't just use Paul Millsap. I know you know this, but I'm saying it's for anybody else.
But yeah.
You can't just use his money because you're going over the cap, and you probably have to let Tim go, maybe even clear another spot or two in order to do that. And while, you know,
you're probably renounce Tim, renounce Muscala.
Yeah, there are worse things in the world that you could do than do that, but I'm not sure that Blake Griffin's going to move the needle. And also, by the way, Blake Griffin and Dwight Howard would not be a fit that I really would love.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I can just see the flattish shit Blake Griffin jump shot from the wing from 15 feet.
Yeah, I think I'm actually pro Blake right now, because people are just kind of down on Blake in general.
He's good.
Yeah,
he's still, very good. He's still but good, not but with what you would need next to Dwight Howard.
No, I mean Millsap.
It'd be a worse version of kind of the marriage that Blake and DeAndre had, in like the things that they didn't fit well with would be amplified comparatively, because DeAndre would actually like roll to the rim and act as a pick and roll guy happily.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's Millsap was about the best guy possible next to Dwight, and then you kind of saw what that netted. You know, I think in general Dwight was pretty decent this year on the floor. We can talk about the off-court stuff later, but listen, you know, Millsap to Griffin is not an upgrade. People want to talk about it because Blake Griffin's famous, and he is younger, which is nice. But you know, Paul Millsap has been better than Blake Griffin for 2 years now, if not longer. So, you know, that may not be the case moving forward because, again, Millsap is quite a bit older than Blake Griffin, but you need him to be healthy and good and clear space, all those things. It's not exactly an easy plug-and-play thing, even though it might entice with the way that they handled Dwight as a famous guy, maybe wanting to sell some tickets. It would not be the craziest thing in the world if they wanted to go out and get Blake Griffin for the same reason, but boy, that would not be something I'd loved. Anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that I have with Paul, and I don't know how much you've gotten into this, is one of the kind of justifications for not – the best justification for not going after Al as hard was not giving him the 5-year max at his age, which is or was 2 years younger than Millsap is coming into this. And suddenly
– And much cheaper, by the way.
And much cheaper.
Much, much cheaper.
Because Paul's on the – full vet max, the 9-year, right?
Oh yeah, Paul's on the biggest one possible. It's 5 years at about $205 million is his max. Yes, you're reading that.
Jiminy
right.
Crickets.
Yeah, I mean the final year, and to be fair, I don't think anybody expects him to actually get the full on 5-year max. But if he did this, I think it's about $46 million in year five, something like that, for the full on, you know, full raises, all that stuff in your fifth year, and he'll be 36. Making almost $50 million. That would end well.
Yeah, that'd be great. so, I mean, I don't see how they justify that one, but I don't know. You know, that's just a thought. And so the question is what you do, and we've talked about this, the rebuild, which clearly doesn't seem to be the way they want to go. However, if Paul forces their hand by not re-signing,
that's my big question too. I said this on a show earlier in the week. It's like I genuinely do not know what they do if Paul just says, "Nah, I'm good," and leaves. Because at that point, I think it's very, very obvious that it's time to rebuild. But if they, for some reason, just are fully against that, I'm not really sure what they think they can do to even be a 5 seed, because you're not going to replace, I mean, I guess short of Blake Griffin, he's the only, you know, player for player guy that you might think would replace Paul. Aside from that, I just don't think you can do better than maybe a 7 or 8 seed if Paul walks. And that's if you do some stuff that probably isn't going to benefit you long term. It's just, we saw how bad this team was this year without Paul Millsap in a small sample. And they're probably not back. They're not that bad. This isn't going to be like a 15 win team if Paul leaves, but it's probably a 31 team. And that's not very good.
No, and it's something that, like, and the Dwight thing is its own issue.
We'll get to that too, but like, why would you? I think it's pretty clear that you shouldn't want Dwight on the roster if Paul leaves. I wouldn't want Dwight on the roster anyway, but like, it becomes doubly crazy if you have your best player leave and you're in this weird transition phase.
You're in a transition phase. He's got 2 years left, but there's no trade value.
Yes, shout out to Kevin Arnovitz, friend of both of ours, for doing the straw poll that suggested that basically Dwight has no trade value. You actually wrote about this, so I want to tee you up on that as well. But shouts to Kevin for getting that out there. Basically said, you know, second rounder and cap relief is kind of all you can get for Dwight, which is I didn't think was big news, but people were sort of taken aback by it. I was not surprised at all because, you know, even if that contract isn't a disaster in and of itself, because it is fairly short, and Dwight was, again, pretty productive this year. You have the off-court stuff and the fact that there are a million centers on the market. Like, Jonas Valanciunas is now apparently going to be on the market. There's just name after name after name at center, and is Dwight better than those guys? Maybe a little bit, but when you talk about having to put his personality in the mix as well, and his age, and the way you have to build around him and not with him, it's a tough sell.
Yeah, so this is kind of where I was at. Like, if Millsap leaves, you have to make a determination on what you do with Dwight, because you have 2 years left on this deal where you're paying him, right around 20 a year?
24.
4.
He's got about 2 and 49 left, or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you're paying a quarter of your salary cap to a guy that, again, his numbers this year weren't disastrous. Nice little double-double. But the Hawks were a better team when he was off the floor. The offense was like 3 points, I think, per 100 possessions better, and the defense was literally the exact same when he was on the court as when he was off of it. So you're looking at it and you go, okay, so this is a guy who – and this has been his thing for a while now. This goes back to the very end of his Orlando run where he's been a productive guy. You know, there's a little bit of time in Houston where it was really bad. But he's been productive on an individual basis, but he does very little at this point that makes a team better. And that's not just the off-court stuff. That's on the court. Like, there's very little he does that makes a team better when he plays than when he's not playing. And it's because of the style he plays that he insists on playing. There are things he can do that make a team better. His rebounding, his ability to roll to the rim. But again, the post-ups negate all that. The insistence on that, there are just certain things he does that just don't make a team better. So you look at it and you go, okay, if you're rebuilding, you're talking about bringing young guys in. So let's take the on-court stuff away. Let's say we like him on the court. Do you want him being, if you take Millsap away, Dwight's your most tenured guy in that locker room? Who's your locker room leader behind Bayes at that point?
I mean, you don't
Hello?
Have
one. You don't have one. Because Thabo's gone.
Yeah. Almost certainly, by the way, after the way he was treated in the postseason.
Yeah, that's a wrap. So you're looking at it and you're like, okay, we're going to bring some young guys in, you know, try to fill this void with some, you know, young assets, maybe bring in a couple young free agents that we think we can take to, you know, Hawks University and make them into a better player. But the thing the Hawks have really had the past 4 or 5 years has been a very solid, strong locker room. That goes away if Paul leaves and, you know, you just don't have anybody really filling that void, because Dwight's just not going to fill that void. Dwight is not and never has been the vocal leader, the strong, like, presence in the locker room. He wants to be the kid. I don't think there's as much wrong with it as a lot of people seem to, but when you thrust him into the role of leader, he's just not going to do it. He's not going to take it on in the way that you want. And so if you have this really young core, it would just be chaotic. I can't imagine Bud would have any fun with that. Like,
no.
Or really be able to really handle it that well. I'd be really curious to see how Bud handled a situation where his most tenured guy is Dwight Howard. He loves veterans. He does not like young guys. We've seen this forever. He never played Dennis as a rookie. He never played anybody. This year was the most he's played rookies since he's been a coach, and that was out of necessity because the wing was a disaster.
I was about to say, I still firmly believe that if Mike Dunleavy doesn't get hurt, Torian Prince never becomes a starter this year. He was playing before that, but I think that was the – he played himself into the role by being kind of, as you just said, out of necessity. But I'm not convinced that that actually happens if they have anything remotely close to full health, even though Torian was quite good.
Right.
You know, just Bud, you could tell, did not want to do it at different times.
Yeah, so now you run into this problem where you're trying – if you do decide you want to move Dwight, you're not going to get – you don't – you know, you'll get a little cap relief, but I think you can only get like $5 million, I think, based off what you have to get back in the trade, depending on what kind of like trade exception the Hawks hold right now.
Yeah, you'd have to find – in order to actually do that, you have to find somebody that had enough cap space to just take him – in order to, and that's, that seems fairly unlikely, to be honest,
right.
Just because cap space is not going to be as overwhelming this year as it was last year, just because the cap didn't spike in the same way. And again, the teams that would want Dwight probably are not going to be teams that have a ton of space, just because you would imagine that the only interest in him would be a team that actually needed the quick fix at center. Like, it's kind of unfortunate that Portland is a team that now has Nurkic, because that might have been a spot for him.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really that obvious. I mean, and trust me, I've been looking. There's not really that obvious place for Dwight right. to just kind of land in this offseason.
Yeah, and so, you know, you're probably looking at, you know, saving a little coin. You got to figure out what contracts you eat in return, because there's just not a really good answer, and this is the position the Hawks put them in. You know, the thing about it is this is the very real risk you knew when you signed Dwight, is that you knew this was going to be a big offseason as far as a transitional period potentially, and yet you go out and sign a guy in hopes that he's going to be a completely different guy than what we know he is. I just, like, he on the court, he performed as well as you could have possibly hoped Dwight Howard performed. He was quite solid.
Yep, agree.
And then you run into a situation where you go to the playoffs, you don't want to play him. Shocker. Everybody keeps going smaller and smaller in the playoffs. This isn't something new. This didn't happen this year.
No, I'm watching a game at this moment as we record this that Ryan Anderson's playing center in, and and against the San Antonio Spurs. So, like, it's not like
Dwight Howard's former team is thriving.
And people wanted to make it this thing about it was not even about Dwight necessarily. It's just, you know, he couldn't move. He couldn't get back on defense in transition. The Hawks got killed in transition with him on the court in the entire series because he just couldn't move. And that's not, you know, for the regular season, that ended up not killing the Hawks a lot of the time. We saw a couple times where it did, but for the most part, he was in the game in high leverage spots and it was fine. But in the playoffs, things just change. And, you know, it wasn't a personal attack on Dwight that he wasn't playing. It was that, you know, the best five didn't include him. And that's just kind of the way it was. And, you know, as you said at the very beginning of this, the Hawks were better without him on the court this year. And, you know, that's not always.
It wasn't that they were bad with him on the court.
No.
It was just like, it was almost the exact same. It was just slightly better. The offense worked a little better and you can get back in transit. That's why the defense didn't see a change.
Yeah.
It's because the transition defense gets better. Your half court defense gets slightly worse, but Muscala provides some of that rim protection. And you have other guys that kind of like fill in some of those gaps. Not quite as well, but your transition defense improves significantly. So it's one of those things where I just don't know where the Hawks go. And if so, my question to you is, if they do bring back Millsap, like, are they just going to run it back?
I mean,
what are their options?
It feels that way a little bit to me. I do think that they, you know, responsible. And again, this goes back to who's the GM, because I don't know who the GM is going to be. But I mean, they could conceivably just run it back and, you know, maybe not sign everyone. I'd be pretty surprised if they signed both Tim and Mike Muscala, only because you're getting up near the tax at that point, provided that Millsap's not going to take some massive discount, which I can't imagine he's going to do.
No.
If he's making $30 million a year at least in year one, which that seems like the baseline. I mean, it could be as much as 35, 36. But if he's making 30, there's not really room to be paying Tim what he's going to get and Mike Muscala what he's going to get, unless you want to give some money away somewhere else, and whether that be getting off Dwight or Kent, neither of which will be super easy to do. So I don't know. I mean, running it back would be not the biggest surprise, and you do add two first round picks. You know, I mean, well, one and a half first round picks. You have 19 and 31, and you assume that DeAndre Bembry is going to be able to play for you next year as a
right.
as a college vet that will be in year two. You would think he would just take Thomas Cephalosha's spot in the rotation. You kind of just run it back that way. But again, like, that team this year struggled to make the playoffs. And
it's not an inspiring thought.
Well, no, and there's some reason to think that some guys will be better. You know, Dennis, Torin,
sure.
and even Kent, you think will probably be better next year than they were this year. But, you know, is Paul going to be as good? Is Dwight going to be as good? There's things to, you know, is Tim going to be as good even if you want to bring him back? It's all mm-hmm. there are some real questions, and I think it'd be pretty aggressive to think anything that's going to be drastically different if you just bring the band back. And I don't see the appeal in that. Maybe ownership does. Like, it seems like he probably does. But
change, this is the question.
My thing is just change something. You can't just
don't
insult my intelligence and just bring the entire team back. That doesn't make any sense to anybody when you saw the product issue.
This is one question that I had is, Phillips Arena is going through the renovation, and there's obviously ownership wants to kind of recoup some of those costs by not losing ticket sales. However, what about this team inspires people to show up any more than any other team you put together?
Nothing. I mean,
none. I mean, you were in there every night. It wasn't full.
No,
that's not to say Hawks have bad fans. It's like, why would you want to go to that every night? Why would you want to go 41 times a year?
Well, that was one of the big. Well, when I signed Dwight Howard, people wanted to tell me that they were going to sell more tickets. As a result, this year they averaged 15,958 at home. Looking at it right now, that was good for 26th in the NBA. The year before, they averaged 16,832. So they drew less this year.
Yeah.
To be fair to Dwight and that whole notion, teams that are better normally draw more fans. So,
correct.
They were six games better, five games better the year before. And they were also coming off the 61 season. So at least that early momentum from the year before. So I get all that. I'm not saying that they were going to draw less because of Dwight, but the notion that he was going to be some box office draw is not going to be a thing. And listen, the Pace and Space team that was entertaining from 2 years ago and even from last year is gone. So what you have was a team that was not a lot of fun to watch. They were defense first team, which I tend to appreciate defense, but from a casual fan perspective, you want to see a team that's going to be able to score and play some fun basketball. And the Hawks just they didn't either this year. They played a lot more one on one, a lot more one on one, a lot more pick and roll, a lot more post ups. And defense muck it up and try to win, not slow, but just kind of uglier than in previous years.
Right.
And that's not fun to watch necessarily.
No. And so my, this is just like, I don't know. Like it's one of those things where the argument that I see from ownership against rebuild is we don't want to lose fans. I get that, but I mean, how long can you string it out? How long can you string it out for the team just gets bad? If you sign Paul Millsap to a 5-year deal, he's going to go into decline at some point in that contract. I don't know. I mean, Taurean Prince is a great young player. I love Taurean Prince. It's fantastic. But I just, you're going to keep getting Taurean Princes in the draft. You're going to keep doing this. You're not going to have cap space to go try and lure the free agent that Atlanta to this point hasn't been able to land, but they've made strides in that area in being a more appealing destination. But I don't know. Like it's one of those things where I look at this team and I don't see how running it back for two or three for the next 2 years if you keep Dwight and Paul and Tim, I don't see how that's the thing galvanizing the fan base the way ownership thinks it is. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I mean, I definitely understand the argument. Dan Wolkin, a friend of the program, has been on the show, likes to point out to me and others that it's about entertainment and kind of, being a respectable product, and that kind of helps you to, it's not all about winning titles, and I get that.
I 100% get that. I mean, but I don't know. This has been the Hawks for a decade.
Yeah, and I get it, honestly. I mean,
and there's something to be said about being a good basketball team, but my concern is you're no longer going to be a good basketball team.
I have the same concern, and I would feel differently, a lot of times the Hawks are compared to the Grizzlies, in conferences and as this middling playoff team for a long stretch that never really has a chance to win the title. And I get that comparison. The difference is that Memphis sells tickets and Memphis really kind of galvanized their city, and the city loves the Grizzlies. The Hawks have an identity.
The thing is the Grizzlies have an identity, and it's not flashy. It's not fun. It's not. You can build an identity around that. You can build grit and grind and really kind of galvanize fan base. But this is a Hawks team that doesn't have an identity. They're not. They don't have a Zebo, and they don't have Zebo and Tony Allen. These really kind of gritty, muck it up type guys that you can build that identity around with. They don't have a flashy guy you can build, even the highlight factory around. Like, I mean, and that was a freaking stretch, because all you had was Josh Smith. That was my favorite part of the highlight factory.
Joe Johnson wasn't a highlight factory guy?
The highlight factory was Jamal Crawford cooking one-on-one in the third quarter and Josh Smith dunking twice. But it was something. It was something that you – but, like, what the hell is your tagline for this Hawks team?
I mean, that's
– I like to think of myself as somebody who's got kind of a marketing-inclined mind. I love the brands, but I'll be damned if I don't see what the brand is on this Hawks team, and that's your problem. That's the difference between – like you said, that's the difference between Memphis and Atlanta. It's not that Memphis is closer to a title than the Hawks. They're not. They might have a couple better players. Marc Gasol, Mike Conley,
They have two. That's the difference. They have two guys on Paul Millsap's level. The Hawks have one. That's all.
Right. They have two guys on that tier, so you can get to, six games in the Western Conference first round, maybe the second round, depending on who you land. But they're never going to be more than a 4 or 5 seed that reaches the second round, but they're a more endearing one to that fan base than what this Hawks team is. I just don't know. I just have this problem of, like, we're going to keep running it back, and there's something to be said for being good and making the playoffs year in, year out. And look, the Hawks are they have the longest streak of playoff runs,
longest in the East, second only to the Spurs in the league.
Yeah. And so, that's good. That's very good. You want that. But I don't know. I think at some point, if there's nothing to really grab hold of for the fans, even that wears out its welcome to a point, there's obviously the risk that you get bad and you don't get better. There's the risk that you go the way of the Orlando Magic.
Or the early, the early 2000s Hawks. That's the argument I always hear. It's like, how much fun was it when they were winning 13 games? And it's like, well, it wasn't fun, but then that same core turned into a 51 team. And it doesn't, again,
you
they
got
were,
Josh,
they
got,
were never going to be title bound. And that's the ping pong ball stuff, because, one pick higher and you have Kevin Durant instead of Al Horford, and you're talking about maybe a title contender. But that's what happened. And they did a pretty good job with it. But even then, they missed on some picks. If they had hit on picks, if they had taken Chris Paul instead of Marvin Williams, you're talking about a whole different thing. So I don't know. I mean, I get the argument on both sides. Blowing it up, like, to the Philly extent is something that I haven't even argued for. It's more of a, like, you got to do something differently, and you can't just there's no hope for me.
No, I'm not saying go all in on the tank. Like, that's, you don't have to do that, but
but
just try to get some, build a you can be a competitive, hard playing team that still wins 31 games.
Well, yeah, you
don't have, is doing my, it that way.
Yeah, my thing is, don't paint yourself into a corner where you can't get out of it, because I think signing Paul, for instance, if it was a 5-year max, signing Paul is going to be crippling for you. And nobody in the world is a bigger fan of Paul than me. I've seen Paul play a lot of basketball games. I will always cape for Paul. I think he's a top 20 player in the league, and I will always roll with him. But, signing him to that deal is going to kill you. It just is. Yep. And maybe you can get off it in the middle of it. Maybe you can find a way to strip down the rest of your roster, and so the point where you're where it's so cheap where you can get away with it. But if you sign that deal, like, it's not a good contract. It just can't be.
And here's my concern. I don't want to see Paul get treated like Joe Johnson.
And he's going to. It's going to
happen, because guess what? The Hawks are with Paul Millsap and the core that they have and the money that they're going to be able to spend are not going to get higher than a 3 or 4 seed. And as long as LeBron's around in the East, you're probably not winning it. probably going to be tough to get out of the second round. I don't want to say look, you know my feelings on Joe. I love Joe. I think the number two should be retired in Phillips Arena the moment he retires.
Agreed.
Paul Millsap has not done as much for Atlanta Hawks basketball as Joe Johnson did. But he is still a very good player, a great player, depending on your definition of where great the line is drawn.
Yeah, I actually think Paul's peak is better than Joe's peak.
Agreed, but I think the problem is it was hard because of the position he plays.
And yeah, exactly. And the
not
fact
quite
that Joe,
as defined.
Yeah, Joe had the ball in his hands all the time. Joe also was the centerpiece of the team that finally stopped losing 50 games a year.
And he had iconic moments.
Yeah, Joe made big shots, and he had the ball in his hands all the time. Which is they're just different players, and you know Joe was a lot longer too. So
Joe used to fold Paul Pierce into a pretzel with dribbles.
But it's
and it made me love him.
But it's gonna happen. Yeah, your point though is right in that if they give Paul the deal, we've seen it again with Kent Bazemore. This is a smaller scale, but as soon as Kent Bazemore made money, he went from you know fan favorite Kent Bazemore who everybody loved to man he sucks. Why does he make so much money? And yep. It's like, well, I know Kent was a little bit worse this year than he was the year before, but you would think that he went from this some great player to some terrible player, and yeah. It really was just that he makes more money.
It's almost as if somebody could have seen that coming.
Well, I know we talked about it in this particular space, but it's worth noting that like as crazy as that is, and as much as you and I both push back against it, if Paul signs for $200 million, there's nothing he could be the same exact guy he's always been, and people are going to make him a punchline.
Exactly, because it's what happens. It's exactly what happens, and it won't be his fault, and he'll get that money, and it'll be good, and, you know, I just don't want to see it happen to him. I don't want 3 years from now people to be groaning about why is Paul Millsap making this much money when he's been so good, and it's going to happen. It will happen. Like, I can guarantee you. We'll have this conversation in 2.5 years, and there are going to be a large portion of the fan base that dislikes Paul Millsap for nothing that he did on the court.
Yep,
because ownership was afraid to go down the road. That is scary to go. Look, here's the thing: it's really scary as ownership, and especially as a front office, to go down that road. The thing about ownership is you can deal with it. If, you know, these guys all have money, they can deal with it. Like, this isn't – the NBA team is very rarely the primary source of income for any of these gentlemen. That's why you own an NBA team is because you got some on the side you can spend. So if you're not making as much money, okay. Like, you can handle that for a few years. A front office, you're going to get fired if it doesn't work out. You know, you're gone. A coach is gone first. And then the GM goes, and so it's a hard thing to commit to, and you have to have commitment from all levels. And even then, it doesn't. That patience runs thin. You can just ask Sam Hinkie. Even if you get a good chunk of the fan base behind it, so it's very scary to do. It's very hard to do, but you don't have to go all the way of the Sixers. You can do it in slightly different ways. You just can't, like you said, paint yourself into a corner where eventually it's going to fall apart without you recouping the assets you need to out of it.
Yep, that's you know, I feel like we're painting a negative picture here, but it's tough. It's tough. I mean, I tried to be as positive as possible on certain things.
You do, and
it's just it is frustrating, and it's worth noting every once in a while that like it's very difficult to see a path here that's super exciting if they run it back, and even if they rebuild it. I'm not saying that's a cure-all. I mean, I think I'm accused of that as well, and it's probably fair that I lean in that direction to be, you know, given all the other options. But that's not an easy fix either. And there's, you know, they're being stuck in the middle is good in that you're making the playoffs, but it's also really bad in that you're kind of just stuck there, and there's a reason you're stuck there. And the Hawks have, you know, aside from the 161 season, they've been there for a decade. They had the one flash up, and that's sort of the argument for keeping everything together. But even then, like, you know, that team didn't win anything. So it's
no, they got
it was fun.
They got yeah, no, and but the thing is, that was a I think you can tell a pretty different group than what you're gonna have.
Oh yeah, I mean,
there's a vastly different level of talent that was on that 60 win team compared to what's on the court now, and that's my argument, right? The funny thing is about us being the guys saying rebuild, we were the guys saying bring back Al.
Yeah, and
you know,
agreed.
And so the thing was, the moment you said Al, you can walk, and you couldn't replace him with a player of that caliber, which again, Dwight Howard is not as good as Al Horford. That's when it signaled to us, all right, should probably go in a new direction. If you were going to kind of keep – you could talk me into keeping Al and keeping Paul together and trying to kind of retool the backcourt wing areas. You can talk me into that. Absolutely. I think there's a core there. There's still a window there. I just don't – I don't see a window for that kind of spark season with this group.
No, it's not there. And also, I mean, I think we – you know, at least before this last season, we at least saw, you know, the previous 2 years, there was a 60-win team and a 48-win team, and the 48-win team had like a 52-win point differential. So I think that's a different discussion when you're talking about a 50-ish win team than you're talking about a low 40s win team. You know, I know that in the grand scheme, you know, it's either if you're a title or bust guy, it's kind of all the same, but I think it's just a little bit different when you're talking about a team that could easily, you could talk yourself into being a top two or three seed versus this team, which I think that would be a big time stretch. So anyway, without getting, I don't know, we've done too much on that, I guess, but it's a situation where the Hawks have a lot of different ways to go here. And I think the most likely scenario, would you agree with me before we get out of here? You know, do you think Paul is likely to stay? I mean, obviously we don't know.
I'd set it as the heavy favorite. Like, I think it's a significant favorite. I think all indications from ownership to even the front office moves that they've made, and we'll have a better idea once they bring in a GM, which you would expect to happen before the draft. But there's not a long window if you're going to wait on David Griffin between finals ending draft. Yeah, I'd say 75%.
Yeah, and honestly, I think
confident in that. It's more whether Paul doesn't want to than anything.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's it for me. I think I'm 90% or more convinced that the Hawks are gonna want to keep him and do everything that they can to keep him. There is that possibility though that Paul is just like, you know what, man, I'm good. I made a lot of money. I'm gonna make a lot of money regardless here, and I want to go somewhere where I think I can win.
Yeah,
and you know, there's an argument for that because I think there are a couple spots around that will have enough money if they wanted to have Paul probably be better off in terms of winning, maybe not winning a title, but if he gets paid a lot of money to go to Denver and play with some young guys, and I think if you just put him on Denver, that's a better team than Atlanta. If Boston for some
also
reason,
Millsap Jokic, you can.
That's what I'm saying.
You can sell me some league pass stock there.
Yeah, I mean, there's situations where I don't think Paul's going to Orlando. That's a team they're going to call again, I'm sure. And I'd be shocked if he went to Orlando because that's just not a spot where he's going to win. But you talk about Boston or Denver or even like Minnesota, teams that you could talk me into winning, and if they offer Paul the 4-year max and the Hawks don't just blow that out of the water, maybe he leaves. I don't know. We'll see.
Essentially like what happened with Al.
Exactly. I mean, I think Al honestly looked around, was probably not super happy that the Hawks didn't give him the 5-year max right away and said, you know what, maybe I'll go to Boston and win more games. And he's probably right because they were the one seed. And by the way, it wasn't even just about this year. You know, moving forward, Boston is, you know, aside from Golden State and Cleveland, is there a team with a rosier outlook than Boston with their picks and stuff?
No, there's not.
So all that to say, Al might have made the right choice there just for him in terms of, you know, I guess he left money on the table. So there's that. And I don't want to have too much of an Al Horford love fest because people don't like that when I do that on this podcast. But anyway, I don't know, man. There's lots to get to. We'll have to do this again before the draft and stuff. We'll have to, once you get familiar with these draft guys, we'll have to take a deep dive into the draft.
I'm ready. I'm ready, and that'll be a time for optimism.
Yes, we'll do that. Drafts are always.
We'll bring the pep back. We'll bring the excitement back as we get ready for the Hawks to draft 19th,
19 and 31 and 60. Three picks, baby.
Let's get it.
And well, at some point, we should talk about Dwight Howard getting pulled over with no insurance, driving 95 and a 65. Yeah. But
so Dwight, here's you know what? Here, let's we'll just do this now. real fast.
Perfect.
Dwight, first off, it's right by where I used to live. Right there, 285 Ashford Dunwoody.
Oh yeah.
So know the area. 95 on 285 is aggressive.
Even at 2 in the morning, yes, I would agree.
Even at 2 in the morning, it's aggressive. Somebody get that man. Somebody screwed up on Dwight. I'm not even putting this all on Dwight. I mean, like, Dwight should have his affairs in order. However, I am so positive Dwight has a guy that handles finances and such, and his day-to-day necessities, that somebody was probably supposed to make sure the car insurance got renewed. Also, how do you not have auto renewal, Dwight? It's 2017. My dude. My Progressive emails me and it's like, you have new ID cards. And I go, sweet. Like,
yeah, and you and I are in a different tax bracket from Dwight Howard. So.
Yes. Set up auto renewal on your insurance. That's how you end up with a suspended registration. Like, here's the thing. It's not a big deal. Like, it's in no way a big deal. A guy getting pulled over for speeding, which also, like, he got a warning for doing 30 over.
Yeah, that's kind of wild. That's some professional athlete stuff.
Oh, boy. I mean, it's interesting considering they towed this car.
I did want
to. Like, I know legally you have to, but, like, that stuff. It was more just kind of a. It was just such a strange story. That's why it became a story. It's because it's like, one, people like the clown Dwight first.
Yes.
So anytime Dwight makes any mistake, it gets a little more attention because it's Dwight. Secondly, the fact that a professional athlete was uninsured and had his car towed after getting stopped for speeding is a very, very strange turn of events and one that I can't ever remember hearing. So get some insurance, Dwight. Hell, you can give me a couple $100 and I'll make sure it gets set up.
Yeah,
Your guy. I'll be your car insurance guy.
That was the big thing, is like, you got to have insurance. One thing that I do want to say is that I do not care that Dwight Howard was out at 2 in the morning before a game. These guys don't go to sleep at 10. They just don't. So I don't care about that. I mean, he's dumb to be driving 95 at any point, much less without insurance. But like, the timing of it, it was the night before Game 6, for those of you that haven't read the story. It was actually originally reported as the night after Game 6, which would have been even more interesting because of the exit interview the next day that did not go super well. I don't care about him being out at 2 in the morning at all. Not even a little bit. It's just him driving 95 without insurance is not the greatest look in the world. But the timing, yeah, I don't really care.
Yeah, we should know, like, these guys don't have to be anywhere till like 11 a.m.
And I believe they didn't even shoot around that day. I think it was like their call was like 3 or 4. Like, it was not a big deal at all.
It doesn't matter. If they get in at 3 in the morning, they can still sleep their full 8 hours. Like, don't worry about them. They work on different hours than you and me. Although not quite as different as me.
Yeah, not as wild as, you know, you and I live that blog life. So, alas. But there you go, Dwight Howard. I mentioned it. People were asking me why I didn't talk about it yesterday. So there it was. There's 5 minutes on Dwight Howard getting cited for a traffic incident. So a good way to end this thing, my friend. Anything you want to plug, aside from your Dwight Howard take from earlier in the week that people should go read on DieMag? Anything else you want to get out there, my friend?
Just read all of the things? I don't know. No. Yeah, always stay plugged in on the DieMag that both of us are doing. Always fun over there. Good stuff. Fun stuff. Sad stuff.
Yeah, I'm stuff. As we speak, I'm crafting a Patty Mills thing for the morning. So if you want to read about non-Hawks things, I'm writing about Patty Mills for Wednesday, if anyone cares about
exciting.
Patty Mills.
Exciting takes.
Huge takes.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you, my friend. We'll do it again very soon, and hopefully it'll be a more exciting episode, as we talked about maybe some draft stuff and some. I do want to talk about Tim Hardaway Jr. and some other decisions that the Hawks have to make aside from Paul. But Paul's the big one, and he's the first domino that has to fall. So I'm cool with spending a lot of time on that. It's just there's other stuff to talk about too. Muscala, there's lots of stuff to talk about. So we'll do it again later in the summer.
I'll be back soon.
Thank you, sir. As for everybody else, I will be back at least one more time this week for the podcast, probably on Friday. And until then, stay tuned.